Nehemiah 12, 27 through 13, 31. For the dedication of the new wall of Jerusalem, the Levites throughout the land were asked to come to Jerusalem to assist in the ceremonies. They were to take part in the joyous occasion with their songs of thanksgiving and with the music of cymbals, harps, and lyres. The singers were brought together from the region around Jerusalem and from the villages of the Netophathites. They also came from Beth Gilgal and the area around near Geba and Asmath Beth, for the singers had built their own settlements around Jerusalem. The priests and Levites first purified themselves, then they purified the people, the gates, and the wall. I led the leaders of Judah to the top of the wall and organized two large choirs to give thanks. One of the choirs proceeded southward along the top of the wall to the Dung Gate. However, Hoshea and half the leaders of Judah followed them, along with Azariah, Ezra, Meshullam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah, Jeremiah. Then came some priests who played trumpets, including Zechariah, son of Jonathan, son of Shemaiah, son of Mattaniah, son of Micaiah, son of Zachor, a descendant of Asaph. And Zechariah's colleagues were Shemaiah, Azarel, Melali, Galali, Mai, Nathanael, Judah, and Hanani. They used the musical instruments prescribed by David, the man of God. Ezra, the scribe, led this procession. At the fountain gate they went straight up the steps on the ascent of the city wall toward the city of David. They passed the house of David and then proceeded to the water gate on the east. The second choir, giving thanks, went northward around the other way to meet them. I followed them, together with the other half of the people, along the top of the wall, past the tower of the ovens to the broad wall, past the fish gate and the tower of Hananel, and onto the tower of the hundred. Then we continued onto the sheep gate and stopped at the guard gate. Two choirs that were giving thanks then proceeded to the temple of God, where they took their places. So did I, together with a group of leaders who were with me. We went together with the trumpet-playing priest, Eliakim, Messiah, Menahem, Micaiah, Eloenai, Zechariah, and Hananiah, and the singers, Messiah, Shemaiah, Eleazar, Uzi, Jehohanan, Malchijah, Elimelech. They played the song and sang loudly under the direction of Jezrah, Ahiah, the choir director. Many sacrifices were offered on that joyous day, for God had given the people great cause for joy. The women and children also participated in the celebration, for the joy of the people of the Jew, and the joy of the people of Jerusalem could be heard far away. On that day, men were appointed to be in charge of the storerooms for the offerings, the first part of the harvest, and the tithes. They were responsible to collect from the fields outside the towns in portions required by the law for the priests and Levites. For all the people of Judah took joy in the priests and Levites and their work. They performed the service of their God and the service of purification, as commanded by David and his son Solomon, and so did the singers and the gatekeepers. The custom of having choir directors led the choirs in hymns and hymns and thanksgiving to God began long ago in the days of David and Asaph. Now, in the days of Zerubbabel and of Nehemiah, all Israel brought a daily supply of food for the singers, the gatekeepers, and the Levites. The Levites, in turn, gave a portion of what they received to the priests, the descendants of Aaron. Chapter 13. On that same day, as the book of Moses was being read to the people, the passage was found that said no Ammonite or Moabite should ever be permitted to enter the assembly of God, but they had not provided the Israelites with food and water in the wilderness. Instead, they hired Balaam to curse them, though our God turned the curse into a blessing. When this passage of the law was read, all those of foreign descent were immediately excluded from the assembly. Before this had happened, Eliashib the priest, who had been appointed as supervisor of the storerooms of the temple of our God, and who also was a relative of Tobiah, had converted a large storage room and placed it at Tobiah's disposal. The room had previously been used for the storing of grain offerings, the incense, frankincense, various articles from the temple, and tithes of grain, new wine and olive oil, which were prescribed for the Levites, the singers, and the gatekeepers, as well as the offerings of the priests, for the priests. I was not in Jerusalem at the time, for I had returned to King Artaxerxes of Babylon in the 32nd year of his reign, though I later asked his permission to return. When I arrived back in Jerusalem, I learned about Eliashib's evil deed in providing Tobiah with a room in courtyards in the temple of God. I became very upset and threw all of Tobiah's belongings out of the room. Then I demanded that the rooms be purified, and I brought back the articles for God's temple, the grain offerings, and the frankincense. I also discovered that the Levites had not been given their prescribed portions of food, so they and the singers who were to conduct the worship services had all returned to work in their fields. I immediately confronted the leaders and demanded, "Why has the temple of God been neglected?" And I called all the Levites back again and restored them to their proper duties, and once more all the people of Judah began bringing their tithes of grain, new wine, and olive oil to the temple storerooms. I assigned supervisors for the storerooms, Shelemiah the priest, Zadok the scribe, Padiah one of the Levites, and I appointed Hanan, son of Zechariah, and the grandson of Mattaniah, as their assistant. These men had an excellent reputation, and it was their job to make honest distributions to their fellow Levites. Remember this good deed, O my God, and do not forget all that I have faithfully done for the temple of my God in its service. In those days I saw men of Judah treading out their winepress on the Sabbath. They were also bringing in grain, loading it on donkeys, and bringing their wine, grapes, figs, and all sorts of produce to Jerusalem to sell on the Sabbath. So I rebuked them for selling their produce on that day. Some men from Tyre who lived in Jerusalem were bringing in fish and all kinds of merchandise. They were setting it up on the Sabbath to the people of Judah, and to Jerusalem at that. So I confronted the nobles of Judah. "Why are you profaning the Sabbath in this evil way?" I asked. "Wasn't it just this sort of thing that your ancestors did that caused our God to bring all this trouble upon us and our city? Now you are bringing even more wrath upon Israel by permitting the Sabbath to be desecrated in this way." And I commanded that the gates of Jerusalem should be shut as darkness fell every Friday evening and would not be opened until the Sabbath ended. I sent some of my own servants to guard the gates so that no merchandise could be brought in on the Sabbath day. The merchants and tradesmen with a variety of wares camped outside Jerusalem once or twice, but I spoke sharply to them and said, "What are you doing out here camping around the wall? If you do this again, I'll arrest you." And that was the last time they came on the Sabbath. Then I commanded the Levites to purify themselves and to guard the gates in order to preserve the holiness of the Sabbath. Remember this good deed also, O my God. Have compassion on me according to your great and unfailing love. About the same time I realized that some of the men of Judah had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. Furthermore, half their children spoke the language of Ashdod and of some other people and could not speak the language of Judah at all. So I confronted them, called down curses on them. I beat some of them and pulled out their hair. I made them swear in the name of God that they would not let their children intermarry with the pagan people of the land. Wasn't this exactly what led King Solomon of Israel into sin? I demanded. There was no king from any nation who could compare to him. God loved him and made him king over all Israel. But even he was led into sin by his foreign wives. How could you even think of committing the sinful deed and acting unfaithfully toward God by marrying foreign women? One of the sons of Joiada, son of Eliashib the high priest, had married the daughter of Sanballat the Horonite, so I banished him from my presence. Remember them, O God, for they have defiled the priesthood and the solemn vows of the priests and Levites. So I purged out everything foreign and assigned tasks to the priests and Levites, making certain that each knew his work. I also made sure that the supply of wood for the altar and the first portions of the harvest were brought at the proper times. Remember this in my favor, O God. 1 Corinthians 11, verses 1 through 16.
I
I am so glad that you always keep me in your thoughts, and that you are following the teaching I passed on to you. But there is one thing I want you to know. The head of every man is Christ. The head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Man dishonors his head if he covers his head while praying or prophesying. But a woman dishonors her head if she prays or prophesies without a covering on her head, for this is the same as shaving her head. Yes, if she refuses to wear a head covering, she should cut off all her hair. But since it is shameful for a woman to have her hair cut or her head shaved, she should wear a covering. A man should not wear anything on his head when worshiping, for man is made in God's image and reflects God's glory. Woman reflects man's glory. For the first man did not come from a woman, but the first woman came from man. Man was not made for woman, but woman was made for man. For this reason, and because the angels are watching, a woman should wear a covering on her head to show she is under authority. But among the Lord's people, women are not independent of men, and men are not independent of women. For although the first woman came from a man, every other man was born from a woman. Everything comes from God. Judge for yourself. Is it right for a woman to pray to God in public without covering her head? Isn't it obvious that it is graceful for a woman to have long hair? And isn't long hair a woman's pride and joy, for it has been given to her as a covering? For if anyone wants to argue about this, I simply say that we have no other custom than this, and neither do God's other churches. Proverbs 21, verses 17 and 18. Those who love pleasure become poor. Those who love wine and luxury will never be rich. The wicked are punished in place of the godly, and traitors in the place of the honest.